is a special report.
Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At U.S. Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. U.S. Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
Psst. Your government doesn't care about you. That's why you need a medical emergency kit. It contains life-saving medications like ivermectin, Z-Pak, and antibiotics. Stock them before they block them.
Hi, everybody. I'm Christine Dolan, and this is our Globalist in Plain Sight Sunday show. And we are honored today to have Jim Kunstler, who I consider to be the Mark Twain of the 21st century, with us. And we're waiting for Lou Conte, and he's having some technical issues, but we've decided to, even though we're a little late here getting going, to keep everything moving. Jim, welcome to the show.
A pleasure to be with you, Christine.
So we've got the conventions behind us. Let's review what your thoughts are about the DNC. And I've got Lou here, so let me just bring him in before we get started. Lou, I hope you can hear us.
I do hear you.
Oh, great. Okay.
And you can hear me. Okay.
Yeah. So we already started. Okay. We just did the introduction. So, folks, this is Lou Conte. He is a polygrapher. He talks to really bad guys, sex offenders, one of my favorite people in New York State, who also writes for the Kennedy Beacon. He's been a good friend of Bobby Kennedy's for several decades. So I was just saying to Jim, Lou, I wanted to get his thoughts, and I want to turn to yours about the Democratic National Convention this past week. Jim?
Well, I think what we saw was a cluster B personality disorder fiesta of disordered thinking, disordered minds, and disordered policy. In fact, there seems to be no policy, but it's actually there. They just don't talk about it because they know that the American voters would probably reject it if they saw what they were, you know, if they actually talked about what they're doing, you know, having the border wide open, running a permanent, stupid, purposeless war in Ukraine, or I guess its purpose initially was to supposedly weaken Russia, quotation marks, and to try to get the other people in the Russian government to throw out Vladimir Putin. I think they misunderstood couple of things. One was how well Putin runs his own country, and two, how much Christian patience Mr. Putin really has, and because he's played this thing very, very carefully and pretty well. And the third thing that we note about the Democrats is that they're all in for censorship, for squashing people's reputations, canceling them, destroying them. You know, they've become kind of the Franz Kafka party of America now. And they've gone full Soviet Stalinist on us. And we have reason to believe that they don't really care about the people in this country, and they don't care how much they punish them.
Lou, what are your thoughts? You've got your mic muted, so you have to undo your mic.
Right. And, you know, so I'm pretty much in alignment with what Jim said. I think that what we saw was a convention that was short on policy, hardly any substance at all. I constantly heard, you know, fawning legacy media types talking about, you know, oh, this is joyful. They're putting the party back in the Democratic Party. You know, in the meantime, you know, we have people struggling to put food on the table. I saw no attention to the actual issues in play for most Americans, which is, you know, how do I, you know, keep my family fed? How do I pay my mortgage? Nothing at all about that. It was, you know, again, these, as Jim pointed out, these odd concepts about, you know, the need to be joyful. And one would think that Trump was the incumbent. Yeah. I mean, that was kind of my impression of what went on here. I was like, you know, weren't you the same people, you know, running the government when everything ran amok? And well, I didn't hardly any comments on that.
So let me ask you this, because, you know, I noticed that there were an awful lot of women the first night. And I thought that there was a certain shrill to some of these female politicians. And I was cringing when I was watching this, because it just seemed over the top to me. I thought that, and it's the first time at any convention, either Republican or Democrat or Libertarian, when they do the roll call and they have this sort of 21st century, you know, the DJ playing up and playing the songs. And then I noticed that, you know, every other or almost every one of the people announcing the results and throwing their votes to Kamala, they were black. And I, you know, you can't, people don't want to talk about this because they're afraid that they're going to be called a bigot or a racist or something like that. So let me just put it out there, since I was the spokesperson for the Nelson Mandela tour in 1990, hardly anybody can ever call me a racist, but I'm not, but you know, as a woman and as somebody who's worked in legacy media, that message was not lost on me as somebody who's covered this now for 40 years. And nor was it lost on me that when Michelle Obama spoke, she never mentioned the word Biden, because there is an angst between Michelle Obama, who's very good friends with Kathleen Yulee Biden, who is Hunter's ex-wife, and the Biden family, because of how she was treated by Hunter and the rest of the family. I thought it was interesting that Obama wanted to put race, as did Michelle, into this, calling, basically accusing Trump of being a racist. And I just want everybody to know who's out there listening. In 1990, when I was a spokesperson for the Nelson Mandela tour, I was brought in at the last minute. They had no plane, no bank account. 9 cities were being visited. There was no press plane to put the Mandela entourage on, nor the networks and the major newspapers. And I made one phone call, and that was 20 minutes of a negotiation with Donald Trump. And everybody from Harry Belafonte on down knew that Trump had given the plane to the Mandela tour, because Trump was on the back of the tail. So I take great umbrage when people start calling Donald Trump a racist, because nobody else stepped up to the plate. Not Lionel Richie. Nobody who had a plane in those days stepped up, but they all wanted to go to the events in the 9 cities. So I just want to put that out there. I thought that this convention was very much racist. And I was pretty shocked, as somebody who comes out of sort of the liberal side of politics, you know, who's probably turned more conservative than most people these days. But I think I was pretty insulted by the women. I was pretty insulted by the abortion. It was abortion, 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 as if Trump made the decision on the Supreme Court, which he didn't. It threw the issue back to the states. So how do you guys feel about that as men when you were looking at this?
Well, the way I felt about it as a, you know, a Caucasian and a man, was that they are running a rather dangerous strategy, because the Democrats have been relying on Black America as a pretty big part of their support. But, you know, they're really only 13% of the population, and Black women are only half of that, let's say theoretically anyway. And what they're in danger of doing is making themselves look like the quote Black Party, when, you know, that is only a small percentage of America. And I don't think that other white men, white people in general, are necessarily going to have a racist reaction to that, but I think they'll see through it and see how phony it is. And they, it's just another one of the things they do that puts them in danger of seeming completely insincere and completely phony about, and fake about everything that they do.
Lou, what are your, what's your reaction?
Yeah, my thoughts were, I think that presidential campaigns should be about broadening your base. It should be about reaching out and establishing relationships with people who may be somewhat interested in you or even disagree with you in an effort to build a broad coalition. I didn't see any of that. I think there was sort of an attempt to reconnect with the Obama years and the kind of ethos of that. But it felt to me like yesterday. It didn't feel like the America I see when I drive around, particularly the Northeast these days. I won't speak to other parts of the country, but I see a country where, you know, people are hurting. And I didn't see any outreach. What about the old Democratic base? The people who build things, who police things, who, you know, get dirty in their jobs and stuff like that. What about those people? Didn't see any reaching out to the, yes, we threw up union leaders, but I didn't see any outreach to them in particular. An emphasis on celebrity too, which I think comes across as, you know, I mean, yes, everybody, you know, likes, I guess, to have some involvement of celebrity, but there was an overemphasis on it.
Well, were you guys as surprised as some people were that Oprah would show up? Because I really wasn't. I mean, she showed up in Maryland a year ago when Wes Moore became governor, you know, and during his inaugural, because she, in all fairness to her, she knew him when she was a reporter in Baltimore a zillion years ago. Mm-hmm. But I just thought to myself, you know, there's something wrong with this picture when you have people who have to decide whether or not they pay for a babysitter, they pay for childcare, butter and bread and milk, you know, the prices are still rising, the wages are not going up, the clothes, the inflation. People are worried about rent and mortgage, and, you know, the younger people are getting disillusioned because they don't have any place to live. So I just thought, you know, when you throw the billionaires on the stage, it's the wrong message when we're on the brink of World War III.
And they're getting lectured by billionaires, which is pretty annoying. You know, lectured about, their moral superiority. And it's just another, you know, layer of this many layered onion of fakery that the Democratic Party has metamorphosed into.
All right. So we're not all coming at this as far right wing conservatives.
I'm still a registered Democrat.
Yeah, so am I.
I just hate them.
Okay. So what do you, when you look back about, you know, earlier conventions, what's your feelings? I mean,
pretty much what Bobby Kennedy said about the party of his ancestors, that they were the party that was against war and the party that was in favor of free speech and the party that was in favor of working people and fairness for working people. And they're none of those things right now. What Bobby Kennedy said, and I can actually read it right off the transcript of his speech, is that what alarms me, he said, is that they resort to censorship and media control and the weaponization of the federal agencies. When the U.S. president colludes with or outright coerces media companies to censor political speech, it's an attack on our most sacred right, a free expression. And that's the very right upon which all our other constitutional rights rest. And that used to be pretty well understood by the Democratic rank and file. And now they seem to have no concept of that whatsoever. In fact, Tim Walz, the vice president nominee, said just about a week ago that the First Amendment was actually a conditional matter, that it kind of depended on what kind of speech you were talking about. And that's the most errant kind of foolery that you can imagine about that.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Jim. And incidentally, if at times you hear some sounds in the background, I have a son here with autism, so that's why at times I'm muting my mic. He's a great guy. He's a happy fella. So if he wanders by and you see him, just wave and say hello.
Okay.
But when it comes to speech, right? I mean, one of the things that Bobby Kennedy has said repeatedly, and I believe it is absolutely correct and in line with what you're saying, Jim, is that when a government feels it can censor speech, it is then capable of any kind of atrocity. And yep. That is crystal clear to me. In that regard, we do have some good news in that his case, where it does have standing. Now, that's been verified, I believe it's the Fifth Circuit, that case is moving forward. So we won't see any kind of, that we may still see someone try to raise the issue of a lack of standing. But, Bobby Kennedy and Children's Health Defense have so far prevailed in saying that they do have standing on these speech issues when they were censored by, the big tech firms who are aligned with, the Biden administration and doing their bidding.
Well, the whole standing issue was in the previous case, the big case was Missouri versus Biden, which eventually became the case of the Great Barrington Declaration doctors against Joe Biden. And the court, for some reason, decided that no real injury had been done to them by the actions of the federal government. I think it was a very bad decision, but the judge in the Kennedy Children's Health Defense case ruled that the injuries were obvious and blatant, and of course he deserved to have standing in the case. And so this is a very different case, and it's going to go forward, and we'll see what happens.
You know, I thought it was interesting in that Missouri versus Biden case, even though you had Paul Merrick and some of these other doctors as the plaintiffs in that case, and when they said that they couldn't have standing, and this seems to be sort of a pattern in before some of these judges, you have to be demolished before you have standing. And I'm thinking to myself, that's not the way that the courts used to be in the past. So it's interesting. And I think that when this case is heard before the Supreme Court, I think it's going to make a big, hopefully it'll make a big difference with these guys.
And I hope it doesn't take many years to get there. Because right now, of course, it's it's being argued in lower federal courts. So,
right.
I think that the issue of standing is often used to try to get out of making decisions that people are uncomfortable with, and smacking the administration on the nose in this instance, and big tech, because, in looking over, a lot of the transcripts from the work of Mike Taibbi and Schellenberger and people like that, it becomes kind of clear that while there was some resistance, there were also a lot of big tech players who wanted certain speech silenced.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
80% of the payroll of Twitter, probably the ones that Elon Musk fired.
Right. Well,
they were all avid for censorship.
Right.
I don't know if you gentlemen paid any attention to 2010, 11, 12 during Arab Rising. Mm-hmm. But prior to Arab Rising, okay, or Arab Spring, people call it different names. We in the U.S. government, in partnership with big tech, took foreign, what Hillary would refer to as civil societies, but they were civil dissidents, and we trained them in camps. So we took foreigners who were basically going to be enablers of the foreign policy we wanted. We trained them the Obama administration stated at the time, we're training them on social media, through USAID, our taxpayer monies, with social media from people from our country, to hold their government leaders accountable, when in fact it was to overthrow those despots like Gaddafi, like Mubarak at the time. So when I take a look at what's happening here in America during COVID, basically we took a model that we used to implement overseas in the age of digital technology, and we have attacked our own people to do this. And I think it's important for the public to understand these were not mistakes. This was an intentional model to shut down anything to do with COVID and any criticism of Fauci or anybody else of that ilk, because they didn't want to create any vax hesitancy at that time in 2020 and 2021. And they also didn't want to have anybody focus on the lab leak and the gain of function, which is Frankenstein science. Because if people really realize that it came out of the lab leak in Wuhan in 2020, the normal thing that should have been done at that point in time was to shut down all of these labs. And now we now know that we have 15 gain of function labs at the level of 4 here in the United States, which is 25% of the gain of function at that level, level 4 worldwide. And I keep on thinking, you know, a lot of what is going on in our political arena really is a deflection from the big issues. Because as you guys said, we didn't really get to policy. We don't really know what Kamala Harris stands for. I mean, it, you know, as political analysts, we can sit back and say, okay, fine. She's been partnership in the Biden administration, number two. She's been at the table. She was told to us by Joe Biden that she was the border czar. That's a disaster. But we also had people on the stage last week that said, oh no, it's not that bad. And I'm thinking to myself, how much more are we going to have to put up with the lies coming from the Kamala Harris campaign?
There's a lot to unpack there, but I want to start by saying that, you know, there's a very broad recognition in the alt news and in the non-mainstream public arena that the U.S. government has run a coup on its own people. And we hear that in so many words, so that it's very well understood what happened. It's just that, you know, between the connivance of the mainstream media with the government, you have this enormous Kafkaesque propaganda machine. Now, you know, it wasn't any accident that the former general counsel of the FBI, James Baker, became the chief censor at Twitter in the last days of the old pre-Elon Musk regime there. And, that it was the guy who was the quarterback for all of the government intrusion. And he, I mean, could you find a more skilled coup master with a huge, with a huge history of messing around with other people from, you know, coming from the FBI? I'm sorry, I'm so mad.
No, I agree.
But I want to say one more thing. You know, you asked a while ago about, you know, what's up with all the women in the DNC behaving the way they behave. And, you know, I've described it kind of half, only a quarter joking, not really that much, that it's, cluster B personality disorder, or, you know, put it simply, a kind of mental illness. I've been convinced for, you know, the last 8 years that what we're seeing is with the pathological hatred of Donald Trump is as simple as just the hatred of daddy. You know, here's a guy who basically we're in a Jungian archetypal dark passage of American history, where everything is writ large into archetypes. And, you know, for better or for worse, Donald Trump is playing that role, has been cast in that role as daddy is in the house. And they do not want daddy in the house. They don't want boundaries. They don't want rules. they don't want to be told what to do. And that's the basic theme of this, you know, of the mental illness of the Democratic women, is that they don't want boundaries. And Trump represents daddy, and he represents boundaries, and they hate it.
Lou, let me ask you, what are your feelings about the fact that nobody mentioned transgender? It came out during the convention as if be who you are, but nobody talked about the fact that, you know, transgenderism is the normalization of the mutilation of children without parental rights. Now, you have, you know, two sons, God bless them, who are autistics. Children, all right, connected to the vaccinations from years ago. What do you think, as a parent who's gone through this horror, about the lack of informed consent, lack of information? Because, you know, I, as somebody who's investigated human trafficking and is very much into child protection journalism, when people say, "Don't tell mommy and daddy," My first reaction is that's what predators tell kids. Sexual predators tell kids that. So when I see the people want to have schools, superintendents, teachers, nurses, Planned Parenthood, you know, don't tell mommy and daddy, my hair goes up, because that's exactly what predators do. And right. and I thought to myself, you know, I have never attended a conference, a convention anywhere on earth, a political convention anywhere, where you actually have a Planned Parenthood vehicle. And they reported gleefully in Chicago that they had 25 abortions during the Democratic National Convention. And I'm thinking to myself, what happened to the Democratic Party in terms of family values?
So I found that to be, you know, this odd sort of celebration of abortion, right? I mean, I remember Bill Clinton saying, you know, it's not something we should, you know, rejoice in, but I get why we have to have it. He said something equivalent to that, mm-hmm. right? Now there's this sort of, you know, mania around this. In terms of the promotion of this transgendering, particularly the surgeries, the drugs, all of that. This is institutional grooming. What an offender does one-on-one with a minor to gain sexual access to them, this is now what's going on an institutional level, right? And what I think is that this is yet another way to make a buck off the children of America, to take advantage of children. You're a child until you're 18. And there's a lot of research that tells us young minds, it takes time to develop. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't adults who go through this and they don't deserve our support. And, you know, and they're making decisions as adults, as informed adults. It's their right to do that. I don't have a problem with that. But the people have to stand up for their kids in law, in common law, going back probably 1,000 years in Western culture, are the parents and loco parente, right? And the state only acts when their parents are not being responsible, all right? And so, you know, this whole notion that someone can go and start changing their sexual identity without the consent of the parent, what if something goes wrong? The parents don't pay the bill?
Mm-hmm.
So what are we talking about here?
Mental illness is what we're talking about, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it mental illness? But Lou, I mean, I want our audience to know this. You're a very well-renowned polygrapher. You actually interview people that I write stories about who are sex offenders, okay? And you do it when they're on parole, when the court says, hey, I want you to check this guy out to see if he or she, you know, has breached and violated their parole agreement. You know about grooming.
Right. Right. And a lot of the questions and let me just say this without getting too far into the weeds on this, but the people I work with are probation, parole officers, and then the treatment professionals. And the offenders are under supervision. They're guilty already. This isn't about seeking out new crimes. It's about preventing them from engaging in the behaviors that got them into trouble here, right? And so what I look at is what are the grooming behaviors that these men engage in? And my questioning often goes to that. Have you been alone with children? Have you had any secret relationships or conversations with people you know are under age 18? Have you given gifts or special attention to these to any young person? And of course, while all this is going on, I'm looking at their body language. I'm waiting to see how they're responding to this line of questioning. And the goal is to get them to identify the behaviors that they gave themselves little permission slips to engage in, and nipping those in the bud. So that's my, I always call it my day job, you know, and what I do at AV24 and writing for the Kennedy Beacon is sort of my night job, my late night job. But, you know, when I see institutions giving itself permission slips like this, I have to wonder what's behind it. And the only thing I can come up with is that there's a marketplace here. People are going to make money on this. They're going to, you know, Bobby said we need to, Bobby Kennedy said we need to end the war on children. This is part of that war, right? Again, an adult who's got some issues in this regard, all the support in the world for them. I have no issue with that. But for young people, it's our responsibility as adults. You know, we have to start to be adults again. And there are rules about that. And one of them is taking care of your kids and all the. So are we going to inhibit parents from, you know, monitoring their kids' health? If you know, I can't imagine. You know, frankly, hearing, you know, well, here's a $10,000 bill. Your kid has started these procedures and you didn't know about it. I mean, that's insanity.
Or because of puberty drugs, there's an FDA black box warning as of July 2022 that, you know, the risk of taking puberty blockers is not just infertility, but it's also blindness. So, guys, we're going to take a commercial break right now. And on the other side of it, let's talk about the assassination, the personal professional assassination of people coming out against Bobby Kennedy, because it is a little bit over the top.
Pandemic, we can never be caught unprepared again. And so many Americans, when COVID hit, they had nothing in the house. Stores were shut down and doctor's offices were shut down. And even if doctors prescribed drugs, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, pharmacists wouldn't fill the prescriptions. That was a nightmare.
Now the situation is much worse. We have these horrible supply chain problems. In our emergency medical kit at the wellness company, we have 8 prescription drugs that are all potentially life-saving.
Most people died with COVID. They died in the hospital because they didn't receive early treatment.
Every American family should have one of these.
I can tell you the wellness company kit is the answer.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs actually, and keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Igor Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. And we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and ERA. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio because you really need to. It's coming. Thank you.
Okay, I'm back with two of my favorite New Yorkers, Lou Conte and Jim Kunstler. And folks, let's talk about the relentless. And I'm pretty stunned by it because a lot of it's coming from the family and now it's coming from friends. Bobby Kennedy is an open book. All right. Bobby's talked about his drugs. You know, everybody knows what happened with his second wife, Mary, which is, you know, unfortunate. Bobby has cleaned up. Full disclosure, I was good friends with one of his cousins a zillion years ago. I dated him. So I know the struggle that Bobby's been through. Lou, you've known Bobby for what, 30 years?
It wasn't until I'd say the past, let me go back here, I guess 18 years, 17 years, that we've been in, you know, in regular contact. But speaking of his troubles, I worked in the probation department all those years ago when Bobby was getting himself together. Mm-hmm. He's spoken openly about his addiction. He still attends 12-step meetings on a regular basis. I think that his discussion of his addiction, his recovery, has been one of the great joys of mine to cover, because we've never had a presidential candidate with this kind of courage to come out and say these things, right? Mm-hmm. And talk about these issues.
I think second chances are really important. And I think it's not just hopeful. It's a miracle. Okay. And it can be inspiring for people, because a lot of people who get out of jail think, okay, there's discrimination for housing, for jobs, et cetera. Their families have, you know, let them down and they're not being inclusive anymore because they've got that rap sheet that's out there. So I always think that it's really important. And I forget the name of the general, Bill Wilson, when he started AA, just like, you know, Carl Jung had said, part of the recovery is believing in a higher power, all right? It may not be the same Jesus Christ that I believe in, but believing in a higher power, having some spiritual basis, which Bobby has explained, you know, when he read one of Carl Jung's books, Carl Jung couldn't convince him that there was a God, but he could say, hey, if you believe in a higher power, there is a chance that you can be saved from your addiction, from your dark side of your personality. And what Bobby has said on the road, you know, we need higher angels, you know, in this fight, because we have fallen so low in so many ways. So I kind of sit back and I think to myself, his family attacking him, his friends attacking him, you know, and then the latest is that somebody that he knew at Harvard when he was a freshman or something, you know, Bobby sold him, you know, $40 worth of cocaine. Mm.
And he didn't buy it?
Bobby, supposedly it's $40, okay? Which in those days, I guess, would be a lot of cocaine. I don't know. But I just think that it's interesting to me that they're going to keep going, because now that he has joined and he's endorsed Donald Trump.
Well, Christine, they're going to throw everything they can at him. And, you know, they'll probably try, they'll dig up every thing that he ever did. You know, he hit his dog once or something. Look, they got nothing else. What it shows is how desperate they are. Mr. Kennedy has been an open book about his prior addictions and his troubled marriages. And because he did that, you know, nobody really had anything else to say about it for the last year. And now they're really coming back to that sort of thing out of desperation. I think that all of that is going to blow over in just a few days. It'll just go down the memory hole like everything else. And, you know, we're not going to hear much more about it. I do think that Bobby Kennedy is going to have a very potent effect on the election going forward. For one thing, he is a master of plain talk, of making it indelibly clear what is at stake and what has happened to us. And that's one of the reasons that's the chief reason that the speech that he gave on Friday was, you know, one of the most awesome political statements of my lifetime, you know, and that includes the things that his dad, Bobby Kennedy Sr., and his uncle John F. Kennedy said. You know, it was an awesomely clear, heroic statement about the trouble that this country is in, and exactly why the Democratic Party has been responsible for it, and how badly things have turned out for them, and how badly they're behaving, and how many hoaxes and pranks they've pulled on the American people, and numbers they've run, and trips they laid on the American public. And he's going to continue to do that. And I think that, he manages to do it in a way that seems absolutely honest and transparent. And there's nothing disingenuous about it. I think that they're going to find it very hard to criticize it or evade the potency of it. So this has just begun with him. Now, it remains to be seen whether the Trump campaign will deploy him intelligently. Personally, I think that they would be smart and he would be smart if they made appearances separately, that he limited the amount of time that he was on stage with Donald Trump, for the simple reason that Bobby is so articulate and so obviously sincere that, you know, the trouble that Donald Trump has articulating ideas and the, you know, the childishness that he sometimes shows, which is really kind of a function of his, his salesman personality.
And his entertainment personality
Personality. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't think it would be unfortunate if, you know, everybody in the country all of a sudden realized, well, gosh, you know, Bobby Kennedy actually understands this stuff better than Donald Trump does. I do think Mr. Trump understands what's at stake. He just can't explain it as well. So I think that they'll, you know, go to separate venues and, occasionally maybe they'll be in the same place. And his role, you know, his role in a future Trump administration seems very carefully lined up.
You know, this morning on just a little while before we went live with the show, Bobby was on Fox and he was talking about processed foods and the dyes that are in them and the fact that processed foods sold here.
Saw it.
Yeah, it was great. Mm-hmm. And then Dr. Phil is supposed to be doing, he did one interview with, he didn't do one with Biden, but he did one with Bobby and Dr. alone. And then Dr. Phil did one with Trump alone. But now they're going to go back to the well and do one with Bobby and with Trump together, which should be kind of interesting because, you know, Dr. Phil's pretty calming. But Lou, let's talk about a column that you wrote several weeks ago, because, you know, I'm going to follow up on that and expand that. But that has to do with Elizabeth Smith. And for those of you that don't know who Liz Smith, and it's L-I-S Smith, is she's a 41-year-old Democratic operative. She went to Dartmouth. She had an affair with a professor. She moved to St. Louis. He ran for state legislature and later was indicted for some campaign financing shenanigans. He went to jail. She was involved with Senator Kaskel's race out in Missouri. She went to Tom Daschle's. She did several others. She worked for de Blasio's campaign in New York City. Then she had an affair with Governor Spitzer. Former Governor Spitzer, after he had his debacle with the prostitute. And then she got a lot of bad press and kind of went under, but the DNC's brought her back. And she's part of the what I call the mean girl pitbull team, going after Bobby. They brought in Mary Cahill, who used to work for Teddy Kennedy. And they brought in some of these people that I've known for years. And Liz, I haven't had any dealings with her, but I'm getting to know her more than she would probably like right now. But you wrote a column about her. Let's talk about her, because people need to know when things are planted in legacy media, it becomes a domino effect, because she, as somebody who is opposition research, knows a lot of political journalists, and then she feeds it out on Twitter and tries to act like she's not the source.
Right. And then they go back to her for a comment.
Right.
So here you
Full circle. It's a full circle.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. I won't use the parlance that one would perhaps use in law enforcement circles to describe that circle. I won't do that. But okay. This is, first of all, another element of her background is that Andrew Cuomo brought her in to troubleshoot his dilemma after it was discovered that he was a bit handsy with women who work for him.
Right. And what was her job, Lou? Let the people know.
Her job was to dig up dirt on the women who accused Governor Cuomo. Yeah. Right. And so all of a sudden, these women who stepped forward, who disclosed this, the abuse at the hands of the most powerful man in New York. And at that time, one of the most powerful men in the country. Right. They stepped forward and all of a sudden negative stories start appearing about them. And then at a certain point in the de-evolution of what happened here with Andrew Cuomo, it turns out that he's not going to make it, that he's going to have to resign or something's going to have to happen and the wheels are coming off the machine. And then she turns on Cuomo and says, "You never told me the truth." Mm. Right. And you know, so her book, I forget what it's called, but she publishes a book that, you know, tries to explain her role in all of this. And now she's brought in by the DNC to attack Bobby Kennedy, who, you know, he will tell you he's not been a perfect person. He will tell you that he's made mistakes. He wants people to learn from those mistakes, right? He doesn't hide them. And yet, you know, what we've gotten from the DNC, you know, spinmeister here, Ms. Smith, is all this nonsense about, you know, divorce proceedings. Probably the bear thing started with her. I wouldn't be at all surprised by that. And while we're all talking about all this, you know, in the background, no one's going to be asked a question about what they knew about the current president, who is still Joe Biden, and his issues. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to pretend that he was doing okay, that he was sharp as a tack. I mean, that to me is an inexcusable, massive lie told to the American people. And that's been, I haven't seen any media coverage of that lately. All right. But that, this is all distraction stuff to keep people from focusing on, you know, the real issues, which in Bobby's speech the other day, I thought he did a great job of zeroing in on those issues. You know, the situation with the war in Ukraine, the situation with the health of our young people and adults. We're also seeing cancer rates, diabetes rates going through the roof, all that kind of stuff. And deploying this kind of publicity is really about, you know, just keeping people from not looking behind the curtain, right, at what's really going on. And that's my analysis of Liz Smith. And I just, you know, I think it's a disgusting job. Why would a human being with any sort of normal psyche want to do this kind of job? I would rather pump gas. I would rather do anything than do this kind of work, you know, that negatizes people. I don't know if that's a word, but that has that kind of impact on people and keeps them away from talking about the real problems.
Well, my theory about a lot of that is that what's really at stake for the Democratic Party is the terror of being held accountable for all the hoaxes and pranks that they've run, many of which, you know, are criminal matters. You know, everything from Russiagate to the monkey business that went on with Michael Atkinson, the Inspector General of the Intelligence Community, and Eric Ciarmella, CIA mole who sat on the National Security Council, who supposedly was a whistleblower for the Ukraine thing, and all the money that was going in and out of Ukraine to the Biden family and from other places to the Biden family, and you know, the January 6th hoax, and I mean all the criminal mischief around the committee's behavior. Throwing out the depositions and all the transcripts of the evidence, it's just a dreadful record of criminality. And there are so many hundreds and hundreds of people involved that, you know, they are mutually all aware that they face criminal liability. And that's serious business. So all right. In my opinion, that's driving the mental illness behind the behavior of the Democratic Party.
So do you think this is driven by fear, Jim?
Absolutely. Terror. Not fear, terror. And so, you know, the remedy for that for the Democrats is to terrorize their opposition. You know, and we do know that one of the features of their Cluster B personality disorder condition is that they always blame the opposition for doing exactly what they're doing. So, you know, they've engaged in a terror campaign against their opponents for 8 years or more. And now they, you know, are afraid that it's going to come back to them.
You know, going forward now, all right, so September is going to, that's when the early voting starts. The Presidential Debate Commission that Frank Fahrenkopf and Paul Kirk set up, you know, in 1987, that's not going to be in play for the debates. We're going to have a couple of network debates. We'll have one at least. I guess it's on ABC first, between Kamala and Donald. But at the same time, during the month of September, we're going to have Hunter Biden's tax criminal case in California happen, which I think is going to be very interesting. Do you guys have any thoughts about why Biden or what Biden may do in case his son gets another conviction? He's already received one conviction for the gun in Delaware. What if he gets another conviction?
I don't think there's any question that he's going to pardon him eventually. The only real question would be, is he going to pardon him before the election or after the election? You know, Hunter might actually have to serve for a few months. Well, actually, he wouldn't be sentenced before that, so that's probably moot. But
he's supposed to be sentenced for the gun thing, November 13th.
Well, that's after the election.
That's after the election, and mm-hmm. Donald Trump is supposed to have his hearing. And do you have any thoughts about, you know, the judge in New York, guys?
I don't know. I think that they're going to call him off just because it would, you know, Donald Trump would probably be willing to go to Rikers Island for 2 or 3 days just for the, you know, showmanship of it, the electoral showmanship. And I think it would get him a lot of sympathy from the people. It would be a vivid demonstration of exactly the kind of persecutions that the Democrats have mounted. You know, it couldn't get more vivid. So he might do that. But I think the Democrats are likely to call Judge Mershon off for that very reason, that it would really only help Trump. Because if they did jail him for a little while, you know, he would appeal it in some way. And believe me, they are going, because of the nature of this situation, it will be expedited to the Supreme Court. And, you know, if I'm not mistaken, the Supreme Court convenes on the first Monday in October. So, yep. You know, he would be out of there in short order. So that's where Mershon is. I don't know what Lou thinks.
What do you think, Lou?
I'm in line with you, Jim, but I also know that there are times where these folks do not act logically.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I know we're all worried about Big Brother. But sometimes Big Brother isn't that smart, you know, right. and that's something I've observed with these folks, you know, I don't understand even the fundamental petition on the New York case. What I will say, you know, we do have this report on the impeachment inquiry into President Biden that is pretty problematic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know there's no point in going forward with an impeachment there, but it does not say good things about what went on with the Biden family business here. They were not exactly as sophisticated. These were not James Bond villains. This was not Spectre in operation here. You know, this it's pretty obvious what they were doing, right? Mm-hmm. You know,
and that's expected to come out in the tax trial because they're going to have some witnesses in the tax trial. What they have done, and I've watched this, people need to know that Haley Biden, Beau Biden's widow, who Hunter had an affair with after his brother died, she was given full immunity for the gun trial in Delaware in June. She is now given full immunity for the trial in California. And they're going to have some witnesses in the tax trial in California getting into the business deals that the Biden family benefited from. So it's not just going to be about taxes and that's it. It's going to be about how the money came in, who knew what, how it was dispersed. And I think that that is going to shine a new light, I think, on the Democratic Party, because when people realize that Hunter and his colleagues involved in these foreign deals actually met with a slew of people in the Obama administration, from the U.S. ambassador to Italy, to the U.S. ambassador in China, to people at State Department in D.C., and either they were done by Hunter directly or through cutouts or through his colleagues, that may throw a big light on exactly how pervasive, Jim, as you said, people knew about this. Mm-hmm. And that may change some of the conversation.
And by the way, that information has been in the public arena for 2 years at least.
Absolutely.
And so this will have the effect of only reviving people's memories about what they've already heard. So they are prepared for hearing this again. You know, the trouble is that the people, the Democratic voters, including all the, you know, the crazy cat ladies, didn't care about it the first time around, or tried to dismiss it because it didn't, you know, coordinate with their belief system. But you know, they'll be reminded about exactly what went down with all this, and where the banks that the money went through, and the amounts of the money. There was a lot of money.
All right, Lou, you get the last word.
Well, I think what we're seeing, you know, I heard someone say recently, describing what's going on as the post-truth era. And, you know, it's kind of fascinating to me that we're hearing all these different things, but we're not focusing on real issues. You know, I want to know where the people are who they may be regarded as boring sometimes, right? But the real people who talk about policies, who propose ideas, you know, that we can debate, discuss, evaluate, all that kind of stuff. You know, where are those folks? I think it's time for people to come out and talk and debate and argue a bit. We'll be fine. We can have arguments and just, you know, I'm not seeing that occurring, and I'm not seeing our media asking for it. It's a little astonishing to me that no tough questions. You know, Kamala Harris hasn't done an interview that's unscripted yet.
She hasn't. What is it, 37 days or something like that?
You know, the clock is, yeah. I mean, are they going to run out the candidate? I mean, this is a clock.
They did it in 2020. Joe Biden ran from the basement. So why wouldn't they do it again? Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that now she's talking about giving amnesty to not only everybody who's been illegal coming across the border in the last 4 years, which is what, around 10 million people, but she's now talking about giving people amnesty during the Trump administration. And these are people that Trump deported so that they can come back in. And then you have to ask the question, well, is this really about election fraud with numbers? And, you know, that's what we're going to have to face. So, I mean, I want to have you two back because I want after the first debate, because I want us to pay attention to what are the machinations by which this election could be stolen? Because I do believe that there's a possibility that the election fraud is going to happen, because anytime somebody talks about giving amnesty to 10 or 12 million people, there has to be a reason for it. And it can only be because the numbers can be used on their side of the table.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Very worried about it.
People should be. People should be.
And we haven't done a darn thing to reform the system to, you know, get rid of the Dominion machines or have paper ballots or, you know.
We have a whole team. Todd and Chris Gleason work on the election fraud for our network. But it really is going to be an issue going forward. But guys, yeah. thank you for coming on today. And God bless. And we'll see you soon.
Namaste, Christine. Bye, Lou.
Bye-bye. Nice meeting you, Jim. Take care.